So the first thing I wanted to do is I wanted to thank all of you for inviting me, including you, Carter, for being here with you. I certainly have enjoyed it, probably more than any of you. I enjoy getting to talk about this stuff. I'm a verbal processor, so to talk about it just helps me. And I enjoy it. You've been polite. You have. I mean, maybe there's things I've said that you don't sit well or you disagree with. And if that's the case, you haven't let me know, so I appreciate that. You've been polite. So, I have really enjoyed this time with you guys. I've enjoyed your honesty. I've enjoyed your attentiveness. I think you have the beginning and opportunity of a community that can really make a difference in your life and in the lives of people around you. And I hope that you'll realize that. I think much of life, we're not aware of things. So thank you. Second thing is, Jordy asked me to do this actually yesterday. He asked, and I said, well, I'll do it tomorrow, so I'll do this real quick. He wanted me to tell you a little bit about the Open Table Conference and the thing that I do called Northwest School of Theology. So this isn't a plug or anything like that. It's hard for me to talk about this because I'm the guy who started it, I founded it, I direct it. And but you live locally, so you may be interested in it. If things that we've been talking about this weekend, and again, I know that you're talking about this because I know Jordy, and I know that if you're hanging out with him, and I started to get to know Fitz. I met Fitz for the first time this weekend. I knew of him from Jordy. So I know that these men who are part of the leadership of your community are talking about this. You're having this conversation. So if this conversation is something that intrigues you or you find life in it, then you might be very interested in the Open Table. The Open Table is it's a metaphor for me. It actually involves several metaphors. One of them is this table. I think of the Open Table as that this is open. This is open for anybody. Again, I wasn't taught that. I was taught it was just for people who believe. I don't believe that anymore. I think it's for anybody who wants to be here. There's a seat for everybody at this table. And in fact, it's where everybody belongs. Do they really belong someplace else? I don't think so. That doesn't mean they may not be someplace else, but they don't belong there. Where they belong is here. See, to be lost, it means you have to be lost from someplace that you call home. See, the whole word of lost has no meaning if there isn't a home. So if the world is lost, it means they belong at home. You get it? It's not like you're lost and that's where you belong. No, you're lost, but you belong here. So he comes to bring you back here. So the table is open. It's open for everybody. It's also open in the sense that what you think matters because you matter. So your opinion, your thoughts, what you're engaging in, what you're struggling with, matters. And so at this table, no one is condemned for what they think. No one is condemned for being wrong. Okay? We're here to learn together. We're here to learn from each other. So that's the idea of the Open Table. And what we want to do is we want to put some things on the table and say, okay, can we have a conversation about this? Because this is something that's really important. So that's what the Open Table is. It's a conference. And I have brought in people to share, to basically kind of set the table. And then it's very much providing space for you to engage this conversation, not only with the people who speak, but with people, other people who are there as well around tables. And we do it here in Portland every year. This year it will be June 8th through 10th. I'm sure Jordy will tell you about it. There's actually a couple of you here that have come with Jordy to the Open Table before. Jordy actually teaches at it. And so I just wanted to... Pardon?
It must be really good.
It must be really good. I love the fact that Jordy stops you in the middle of a song and says, okay, by the way, I need to correct this song here. This is awesome. It's like I've never seen anybody do that. I'm like, this is great. Like, this isn't song. This is a theology class. No, I'm sort of. So it's great. So anyway, I want to just let you know about it, invite you to it. It's June 8th through 10th. You sleep in your own bed, go home. You know, it's held at Warner Pacific College, which is just off of 205. I assume probably most of you know where that is. It's on Division, right off of 205, like maybe a mile. And so it would be pretty easy to get to. Love to have you. Just go to opentableconference.com. Pretty easy. That's how you find out about it. Gives you information. You can register there, et cetera, et cetera. Jordy, if a group of you want to come, if you want to do it that way, you get a discount, let me know. He knows that. We've already done this. So if you want to do something like that, just let me know. Open Table grew out of actually Northwest School of Theology. Northwest School of Theology is something that I did because for years I used to go to Slovenia. Anybody know where Slovenia is? Okay, a couple people. It was part of Yugoslavia when it broke up. Slovenia became one of the countries that gained its freedom. That was back early 90s, I believe, 91, 92, right in there somewhere. Very fortunate because a lot of the fighting did not take place in that area, in what is now Slovenia. So the infrastructure of Slovenia was left intact. And it's probably the main reason why Slovenia was brought into the EU. You know, and the other countries weren't. That over in Europe, that was a big deal. Because they're not the biggest country, but financially, economically, they were doing better than a lot of the other ones because they didn't have the destruction in their infrastructure as a culture that the other countries did. It's actually very much like the Northwest. The Alps kind of peter out in Slovenia. So on the west side that borders Austria and Italy, you've got the Alps, big, tall, amazing mountains. By the time you get to the east side, it's more like rolling hills. And you just see the change go through the country. Lots of woods, lots of fir trees, evergreens, a lot like Oregon. And I had some friends that went over there and chose to live there and basically grow to love the Slovenians. And they asked me to come over, and we would teach English, and it was a way that we would build relationships, particularly with young people. And as we built relationships, okay, the typical mission was build relationships so you can tell them about Jesus. And my friends were like, no, we just want to build relationships. And I was waiting for so you could tell them about Jesus, and they just looked at me. And I go, I love what you're doing. Because there was no agenda. They were just loving people. Because they knew if they loved people, eventually they'd talk about Jesus. But that wasn't the agenda. The agenda was to love them. And I went, oh, how great is that? Anyway, so I got involved with them. There was a period of about 10 years there from 2003 to 2013 where I was going over to Slovenia a couple times a year. And one of the highlights of that decade was I got to take my entire family with me one time. And my kids helped lead English classes and loved on Slovenes. And it was just the coolest thing because for me, my kids, I said, this is what it means to serve Jesus. It's to love these people. That's it. And they got it. It clicked. And they loved it. And they still correspond on Facebook or Instagram or whatever with Slovenes from 6 years ago. And I, to a dad, it's like, wow, that's awesome. That's great. So anyway, I was over there and they asked me to help put together kind of a 2-week-long intensive for Slovenes, because there were some Slovenes that were actually starting to follow Jesus, and they didn't know anything. I mean, they were literally a blank slate. They didn't have any of the baggage that I had, any of the things that I'd learned. They knew nothing. They said, would you come over and help us teach them? I was like, yeah. Would you help us put this together? Yeah. So we put this thing together for 2 weeks. I'm flying back from Europe after doing that, and I'm looking out the window, and I don't know where we were, but I'm looking out the window, and I remember thinking, I just flew halfway around the world to do this, and I don't know of anybody that's doing this where I live, like putting together some kind of way where a small group of people can have an intensive where we talk about these things. This, a weekend, happens all the time, but it doesn't happen very often for a week long or 2 weeks. And I knew right away that no American would do it for 2 weeks. It just wouldn't happen. It just wouldn't happen because people have to take off. They're not going to use their entire vacation time to go talk about God. So I said, okay, well, we'll do it for 1 week. So back in 2007, I decided to do it. And in my genius and this burst of creativity, I called it school theology. That's sarcasm. Like, what a stupid name, right? School of theology. Like, okay, great. What are you going to do, read the phone book next? So, that's just, you know, I didn't know what else to call it. So I said, what? Because it's not a school, but we can talk about theology. So it's basically, I limit it to 20 people. And so there's 20 of us that will spend a week. We live together. We eat meals together. And we have conversations. And we process things together. We try to engage one another and in our relationships grow to come to love and respond to the Father, Son, and Spirit. And I bring in different people, writers, teachers, pastors, and they'll come and teach. And what it does for people is it gives them the access to be able to meet these men and women and talk with them, get to know them. On a personal level, because they eat dinner with them. If they want to go on a bike ride, they can say, hey, would you go on a bike ride with me? I'd like to talk to you about some things. And they do it. Like, the people that I asked to come do this, it's not like they talk to you and then they go hide in their room because they want to whatever. They're there with them. And it's total 24/7 access to them. Now, that kind of meant something to some people, because someone like Paul Young, who people stand in line for hours just to get him to sign their book, and they say hi, well, now you can have dinner with him and talk with him and say, you know, you said this and it sounded really like weird. What did you mean? Oh, okay, well, what I meant was this. Does that make sense? And it was great. So that's what School of Theology is. And so again, if this conversation that we've been having and that you continue to have as a community, as Columbia Presbyterian, if that's something that interests you and you go, I'd really like, you know, I can't go back to school, I have no interest in going back to school, but I'd really like to engage this on maybe a more intense level or a deeper level or even just a prolonged period of time, then just talk with Jordy and say, hey, I'm interested in that. How do I get in touch with John to do that? I'd usually do 2 or 3 sessions a year. I'm doing one in June. It's already full. And I'm doing one in September, which is, I think we've got 14 people signed up already, so it's almost full. So it's a kind of thing where it's really, I think, for me, it's fun. We do it in Sun River. It's not a tough place to hang out for a week. And that's what we do. So that's Open Table, and that's School of Theology. If you're interested, talk to me or talk to Jordy. Okay, if you're not, it's perfectly fine. Okay? So, I was talking with John and Matt this morning at breakfast a little bit, and we were actually talking about something you just said, Jordy, about what I had mentioned yesterday about nature and the fact that of all creatures on the planet, we have the ability to look at nature aesthetically. We see beauty. And we don't just see beauty, we look for beauty and we want beauty. Beauty is maybe not physiologically necessary to survive, but I think emotionally and psychologically it is. I think if you removed all beauty from a human being, they would suffer terribly. And I'm not talking about just looking at nice things. I'm just saying beauty, whether it's the beauty of relationship or the beauty of the mountains, it doesn't matter. For me, in my life, beauty has been a lifeline from me to God. It's what saved me. It's what held me to still cling to hope that all of this was better than I thought it was. And beauty was the thing that said, yeah, it is. If there's this, then it has to be better. Because the way I was learning about God was killing me. It was suffocating my soul. So, we were talking about that this morning, and I told him I'd say I was going to tell you guys a story. And the first coffee table book I ever did of photographs was called By Chance, with a question mark. And this is how the book came about. I told you I grew up in Pennsylvania, and in 1980, I moved across country to come here to Portland, Oregon, to go to seminary, to go to graduate school. And I had a little Chevy Chevette, if you remember that car. And I had taken a hacksaw and cut out metal of the hatchback in the back, not the like actual hatchback, but on the floor, and I'd put in these big giant speakers for my stereo, right, my car stereo. And I packed the car with everything I owned, and I left these two holes. I wouldn't pack anything on top of the speaker so I could hear the music. And I set off and drove across the country, and I decided to go the long route. If you look at a map, and here's the East Coast, here's the West Coast, you know, here's Oregon and here's Philadelphia. I didn't do that. I went like this, okay, because I wanted to see the Grand Canyon. That was the reason I went like 1,500 miles out of my way. I wanted to see the Grand Canyon. And so I drove down through Tennessee, through Texas, along the southern part of the U.S., into Arizona, to the Grand Canyon. This is another really kind of ironic thing. I had been a pastor in a church for 4 years when I left to move to come out here to go to grad school. And they had a going away party for me, and their parting gift to me was my first camera. Little did they know. No idea. So I was a complete idiot fool taking pictures out my window as I moved, right? This is before digital, guys. This is, you're shooting 35 millimeter film, and I'm taking pictures as we're moving. But I wanted to go to the Grand Canyon, and I wanted to take pictures. Pictures fascinated me. I don't know why, but I'd never had a camera. I was 28 years old, and I never had a camera, but they gave me my first camera, and I immediately went, this is fun. This is cool. And then I get my pictures back, and they didn't look anything like what I saw. And I go, how do these guys make it look like what they saw? Because clearly, I'm not doing something right. And then the other thing I would do is I'd take like 20 pictures of the same thing. Because this is what I do. Like when I got to the Grand Canyon, I'd take this picture, you know, and then I'd walk over here and, you know, and, oh, that's just so beautiful. And I'd take this picture, and I move 10 feet. And I look at the picture and I go, what's different about that picture? Why did I take that picture? I don't know, but that was me. I'm sure you've never done that. But it's easy for you now. You do it with your phone, and if you don't like it, you just hit delete and it's gone, right? Well, I'm burning up film, and I'm not very wealthy to begin with. I'm going to grad school. And I already told you everything I own was in a Chevette. That tells you how wealthy I was. So anyway, I get to the Grand Canyon. I'm on Interstate 40 going west. I get to Flagstaff and head northwest. Anybody been to the Grand Canyon? Okay. All right. You probably haven't gone that way, at least not from here. That would be kind of weird because you'd be coming from the northwest. But when you come out of Flagstaff and you start going toward the canyon, it's basically nothing but juniper trees and just brush. It's really like, where am I going? This is like, what is this? And again, at the time I didn't know it, but I went through Flagstaff. This was late August, so the sun was going down around 8 o'clock at night, and I went through Flagstaff about 5 in the afternoon. It takes about an hour plus to get to the canyon. So I got to the canyon about an hour and a half before sunset, which is the best time to go to the canyon. Because what happens as the sun goes down, the shadows grow long across the canyon, and the light hits the walls, and the walls start to change color because of the way the light's hitting them. And John Muir, who, I don't know if you ever heard of him, he called it the show. That time of day, he called it the show. So I didn't know any of this, but I went. And I get to the canyon, and this was the amazing thing. It's the end of August, 1980. I get to the canyon. This was weird, too. For those of you who have been, do you find it weird that you get there and you pull up to a turnout and you can't see anything? Like, you're there. It's like time to get out of the car and see the canyon, and you get out of the car and you can't see anything. Like, I thought this was supposed to be this gigantic, huge thing, and it's like you can't. Well, yeah, because it's not up, it's down, right? So I get out of the parking lot, out of the car, I walk through a few junipers, and it just explodes on your view. There it is, as far as you can see that way, as far as you can see that way, there it is. And my, I'll get to this in a second. Anyway, so I'm like, whoa, because I'm there at the right time. It's 6:30, and the color's changing on the rocks, and I'm taking pictures like an absolute fool, man. I'm just burning up film like crazy. But here's the crazy thing. There was nobody there but one other guy. Okay, if you did that today, if you went to the canyon at that time of year, at that time of night, you would not be alone. You would have several hundred people there, okay? It's just what has happened. But it was just me and this other guy. And we're standing there. I've taken pictures. And I'm just drinking this in. And to be honest, it was a worship moment for me. And I'm sitting there and I'm just thinking about God and what He made. And I'm thinking about the beauty of what I'm seeing. And It was one of those moments where you go, man, I'm really glad I'm alive, whatever that means. I'm glad I'm experiencing this. And I remember thinking, I'm glad I went 1,500 miles out of my way to see it. And then this guy, who I do not know, for all I know, he could be sitting in this room, because I don't even remember what he looks like. He speaks and says, isn't it amazing what evolution has done? And I'm standing there thinking the exact opposite. But here's the thing. His reaction to what he was seeing was identical to mine. He was in worship. He was in awe. But he didn't know what he was worshiping. He thought he was worshiping chance. So my first book was By Chance? And it was based out of that conversation that I had with that guy. And I didn't even really have a conversation. He said it out of the blue. And I'm thinking, it startled me. And I thought, and I don't even remember exactly what I said. It was something to the effect of, like, I was kind of thinking the opposite. And I remember, I think, him kind of like, you know, like, yeah, you're an idiot. you know, that kind of thing, right? Like, oh, you're one of those, right? I don't know what it was, but we never talked after that. That was it. And I drove away, and I'm saying, same place, same time, same view, different perspective. Right? Even the same responses to what we were seeing. He was filled with wonder just as much as I was. The Father and Son and Spirit were screaming in his ear, and he didn't hear it. He heard it, but he didn't know what it was. Okay, I say that to tell you this story. So, fast forward about almost 20 years. I'm married, I have 3 kids, and one of my goals in life is to take my family to the Grand Canyon. I want my family to experience what I experienced. I want them to see the beauty. I want them to be wowed. I want them to connect like their dad has connected, because none of them have seen it. So we plan this family vacation, and again, for any person who's a parent, just think back to your first family vacation. So we literally sold the car that we had and bought a van so that we could make this trip. And we drove a van from Portland to the Grand Canyon. And actually, it was, as far as family vacations go, it was a pretty good trip. I mean, I'm really, to this day, kind of shocked at how well we got along, how good it was. It was just, you know, it was good. So we get to the Grand Canyon, and I've got this whole thing planned out now, because I know now, but I'm a nature photographer now. So I know when I want to be there. I know where I want to be. I know when I want to get my kids there. So we get to the hotel, we throw our stuff in the room, and we're kind of late. We're running behind, and I'm going, okay, we got to go, because Dad's got to get you there. I got to get you there at the right time. You got to see this at the right time, blah, 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 blah. So I'm rushing the kids. We get in the car. We drive, we get through the park, we get to the parking lot, to the turnout, and my kids are going, like, where is this? Where is this? And I'm thinking, you're exactly like me. Like, I got there the first time, and I go, where is this? How come I can't see it? They get out of the car, I go, come on, follow me. And I was so excited. I was like, I just can't, it's hard to describe. I just was so excited with anticipation to just see the reaction of my kids when they walked through the trees and it exploded on their vision. So I go, come on, and I'm almost running, like leaving them in the dust, and like so I gotta kind of calm myself down, and we walk through the trees, and sure enough, man, my kids, it's like, ooh, ah, and I am just like in parental nirvana, man. I am like, all right, Dad pulled it off. Like, he did it. The perfect family vacation, right? And my kids are just loving this, and they're going like, oh, this is beautiful, Dad. This is awesome. And I'm sitting there, and I've got this silly, crazy grin on my face, because I'm just like, oh, this is so great. They love it. I'm so happy. Right? Well, after about 10 minutes, I don't even know if it was 10. May have been 7. I don't know, but it wasn't very long. My son, the oldest, and my youngest kind of look at me, and again, I'm standing there with this silly grin on my face, just like, this is the moment I've waited for several years. Here it is, it's not disappointing. It's great. But they look at me, and I can tell the look is kind of one of those, I want to say something, but I'm not sure you're ready for it. You know, like, do I say this to Dad or do I not say this? I can see this on their faces. So I go, what? What's up? And my son, being the oldest, he's the one who sticks his toe in the water and says, Dad, can we go get some ice cream? And I'm like, like, I'm just like frozen, like, and I gather my wits and go, oh no, like, Chris, like, seriously, it's just getting good. Like, if you wait here a little bit longer, the colors just get spectacular, and it's unbelievable. You've never seen anything like this. It's really cool. And And I remember him kind of shuffling a little bit, but my youngest, my daughter, because she's the youngest, she's the boldest, I guess, I don't know. She looks at mom with this like pleading look face like, can you help us? Like, can you get us out of this? Can you deliver us from dad? Right? And she looks at mom, and I see it. And like the smile is disappearing off my face. The body language of my body is beginning to slump, right? Like, because it's just like you're letting the air out of me, right? And Terry looks at me kind of like this. Yeah, okay. And as there's this kind of, there's this hesitation, there's this awkwardness, because I don't want to say yes, all right? But I realize, like, I can't, if I force him to stay here, this isn't going to have a good ending. And my middle daughter, Ellie. This is so, so cool. She hasn't said a word, and she's watching this, and she looks at me, this 8-year-old, this cherub of a person, says, she walks over to me and she looks up at me and she says, Dad, I'll stay with you. I melt on the spot. I'm getting emotional now. I'm undone. This angelic messenger just came up and said, I'll stay with you. Jesus, staring me in the face through the eyes of my 8-year-old. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is how we get to know Jesus. I didn't learn information. I didn't study a book. I didn't go to a class. I talked with my daughter in the stuff of life, and Jesus met me in her voice and in her eyes. That's knowing. That's relational. That's what I've been trying to say to you all weekend. That's what the way God meets us. So, again, I need to tell you this, because if there was anyone in the McMurray family that loves ice cream, who is it? Zelly. She would eat ice cream for every meal if we would give it to her. And she's the one who says, I'll forego ice cream. I want to be with you. I want to stay here with you. So that day, my wife rescued my children from the obsessive perfect vacation that Dad wanted to do. And Dad learned a little bit about what it means to participate in the love of the Father, Son, and Spirit from his 8-year-old daughter. Let me tell you another story. We have good friends. In fact, I was the person who performed the ceremony of their wedding. And one night, like any other night, we're at home and we get a text and she wants to come over. And sure. So, you know, I don't even know how or why, but for some reason, I was at the front door when she pulled into the driveway. So I don't remember if I was waiting or looking or whatever, but I happened to be there. She didn't come to the door and knock or anything like that. She pulled up. When she got out of the car, I opened the door and I'm standing on the porch now. She got out of the car. I could visibly see that she was visibly upset. So I walked off the steps and walked toward her. And as I got to her, she just grabbed me and started sobbing. And she was sobbing in her head is in my shoulder, and she's just sobbing. And I'm holding her. And in her sobs, what came out was her husband, you know, which David wants to leave me. Right? And she's just, and when she finally gets it out, she starts sobbing more. And I start getting emotional. And what happened in the embrace was the strangest thing, because as she embraced me, I began to feel her pain. I don't know how that happens. I mean, I don't think there's electric currents going back and forth, or somehow chemicals jump from her body into my body, but somehow, some way, at the emotional, psychological level, the physical embrace, I began to feel her anguish, her pain, her betrayal. But at the same time, she began to feel my strength, my peace, because I wasn't in this turmoil. And so in the embrace of holding one another, there was this exchange. And what began was the faintest sign of healing for her. Because I was in the embrace taking her pain into me, and in the embrace she was taking my peace and my strength into her. That's what union and participation with the eternal Son is. I can't, like I said, I can't explain it, but I know that at a much deeper level, not just simply a physical embrace, that this is what Jesus does. Gentlemen, the living God lives inside you. And the deal about whether he's inside your body or not doesn't even really matter. Like this is an invisible wall? He can't get through your body? Like, poof, really? Come on. But he's in you. And what he's doing in you is he's healing your soul. This is what Peter says in 1 Peter. He's healing your soul. And the way he does it is he has united himself to you. And in that union, in that embrace, which is far more than just a physical embrace, it's an embrace of being. For the eternal Son became flesh. And when God united himself to humanity, he united himself to you. And in that union, he's healing you. He's taking in your betrayal, your pain, and he's giving you his glory. Remember what we didn't read it, but I referred to it in John 17 last night. Father, I gave them the glory you've given me. That's what he's doing. He's healing your soul. If there's those of you here that want like the Bible verse, like, John, where would you get that idea? Like, you're not really teaching us the Bible. Well, 2 Corinthians 8:9. Go look it up. Because I've gotten that accusation too. You don't teach the Bible anymore. You just talk about these stuff. Like, this isn't what the Bible says. No, it is what the Bible says. Go look it up. 2 Corinthians 8:9. In fact, someone look it up right now. Read it. Read it out loud for us. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, who... Someone want to read it? Please. There you go.
For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you, through his poverty, might become rich.
You see how it happens? You, through his poverty, become rich. It's the great exchange. And he does that by uniting himself to you. And he didn't do that when he died on a cross. He didn't do that when you asked him into in your life. He did it when he became a man, before you were ever born. Put that in there and stir that around for a while. That's when he united himself to the human race. But that's what he's doing. So here's what I'm after. So when my 8-year-old daughter walks up and tugs on my shirt and looks up at me with these angelic eyes and says, "Dad, I'll stay with you," Jesus in her is connecting to Jesus in me, and she and I are connecting because we're united to Jesus and he's united to us. And communication and healing and growth takes place in the actual living and experiencing of the moment together. It's not, okay, if I get to know Jesus, then Jesus will do this for me. If I get to know Jesus, then he'll free me. No, it's in the knowing is the freeing. It's in the moment with my daughter, as she says to me, "I'll stay with you," that frees me. That brings this joy unspeakable to my soul. That heals something in Dad that hears the whisper of, "You're not the perfect dad. You've blown the vacation because I obsessed over this." And she frees me from that obsession, going, "Dad, it doesn't matter. I'll stay with you." Does this make sense at all to you? I mean, it makes sense to me, and I'm asking that genuinely. I don't know if that makes sense to you. It makes perfect sense to me because I was the one experiencing it. I was the one in it. So I hope this makes sense, because I'm trying to help us get our minds, as it were, around this idea, like, well, what does it mean to live as a son? What does it look like? And what I'm trying to say is, it doesn't look like anything special. It's just simply ordinary life, because he's in all of it. Our problem is we're not aware of it. We don't recognize it. We don't see it. We just think it's ordinary life. But it's not so ordinary when your daughter loves you in a way that literally blows apart your understanding of love. And it's like those times where I kind of am almost forced to pay attention. You know what I mean? But it's happening all the time. What would make us think that God is not always working in our lives? What would make us think that he's not always loving us? You know, it's break time, John. We're going to go over here and chat for a while. We just need a rest. Like, you're just high maintenance. We'll be back. Just take it easy for a while. No, that doesn't happen with the Father, Son, and Spirit. So, to bring this full circle, I started Friday evening and I started to talk to you about my freedom from fear. To be free, to live so that everything I do is never ever motivated from some place in me that fears. Whether it's fear of regret, fear of shame, fear of not being enough, fear of not being good enough, fear of failure, fear of what people think of me. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. To be able to live in freedom from fear is really saying, I'm able to live and be who I really am. No cover up, no hypocrisy, no bait and switch, to actually be who I am, the person that God made in his image and likeness. Now, the fall has made that terribly confusing, and it's made it a terrible mess. So here's, if I can say this, like, everything I'm saying, I hope I've said it along the way, but it gets to this. This is how John says it. Perfect love drives out fear. For fear has to do with punishment. So, if I want to live in freedom, if I want to know the truth and live in freedom, it means I come to know this being, this person, for this is life. But it's his love that frees me. It's that simple. And you say, it took you a weekend to say that? Well, yeah, kind of. But it's that simple. It's the love of God that frees me. It's the love expressed when God took on flesh. It's the love expressed of the way those three persons, the being of God, relates, that's expressed to me when he takes on flesh, that frees me, that heals me, that brings life to me. We try to put it in formulas. We try to systematize it. We try to memorize it. We want six ways to how to do it. And I would just encourage you to just set that all down, breathe, and start living. And pay attention to what he's doing, because he's doing. Start listening for him loving you, because he is. You don't have to go find a way to do it. Okay? God is the great initiator, folks. Right? He's the creator. So, I hope that will give you something to at least chew on, so to speak. Something to say, okay, what does this look like? These ideas, these thoughts. For me, it's what's it like relating to Ellie? And this I'll close. I wrote about that story in the book that I just finished, that's coming out here in June. And I had Ellie read it, the story about what she did for me, because I'd never told her. I mean, when it happened, I bluttered, you know, thank you, Ellie. I didn't know what to say. I was an idiot, right? And I let her read the story. And that was another moment. As she read it, tears formed and started to fall down her cheeks. You know what it was? You know what she was crying about? Ellie, this is how I feel about you. This is what you mean to me. Because at the end of the story, I say, the rings of Saturn would be a gift too small for my Ellie. All I'm doing is saying, Ellie, I love you. I love you. I'll never stop loving you. You say, John, how has this changed your life? I'm a better dad. I'm not a perfect dad, but I'm a better dad than I was. I love my kids better than I did. I love my wife better than I did. I actually love life. I actually love myself better than I did. And again, so I don't see that as something bad, something that I should go like, John, this is the wrong path. It's like, no, like you're asking me, I'm experiencing freedom like I've never experienced. I'm experiencing love like I've never experienced, and you want me to give it up? I'm not gonna. I don't know what else to tell you. I'm just not. And so as Ellie read it and she started crying, she just looked at me and she said, Dad, that's all she said. She said, thank you. That's it. Couldn't say it. She was too emotional. She said, thank you. Like, I wish I could communicate it better to you. I wish I could take everything I feel and think and somehow dump it in you so you knew. And God said, yeah, I feel the same way about you, except I've done it. I'm inside you. I've dumped myself in you. I've united myself to you. So gentlemen, start listening. Start listening. Okay? I'm going to pray because, contrary to popular opinion, I actually pray still. All right? I didn't want Jordy to come up and go, we should pray because, you know, this is a Christian meeting. So, no. Let's pray. And then, Jordy, I'll hand it over to you however you want to do communion. Okay? Would you guys pray with me? Father, you know how much that story means to me about Ellie and me on so many levels, and levels that I don't even know yet, probably. And I look forward to where you'll take me with it. But I want to say to you this morning, I'm grateful that I know that you love me even better than my Ellie does. And I want to thank you for meeting me in her that day at the Grand Canyon. I'm grateful. I would ask that you would help all of these men recognize when you meet them. And I ask, Lord, that it might impact them like you've impacted me, and that they would know that they are embraced by you and you'll never let them go. You'll never stop loving us. And as we think about why we know that to be true, as we share in the body and blood of Jesus, I pray you'll meet us there and help us to know you better than we did before.